Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser said it all.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am Dave Dynasty, and we are back. I apologize for the long break between episodes. What turned into a holiday break ended up getting prolonged a little bit, and I apologize, but we are back in business with a new episode. How's everybody doing out there? I hope you're doing well. I hope you had good holidays. And let's get back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This episode, we are remembering Bob Boyer, better known in the WWA as Chief Bobby Bold Eagle. He passed away on January 4th, excuse me. And joining me to discuss Boyer's career will be friend of the show, John Lawson. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will remember Bob Boyer. Filsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit FilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilsingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams.
Well, today, Dave, we're here to talk about the passing of a longtime Midwestern and more specifically WWA Indianapolis wrestler, Bob Boyer, who was better known as Chief Bobby Bold Eagle for a large part of his career. And he passed away on January 4th, 2026, at the ripe old age of 93 years. Yeah. And in looking at the Wikipedia list, which we know that has to be correct, he yeah. would have been, I believe, the 5th oldest living wrestler at the time of his passing.
Yeah.
And looking at the ones that are ahead of him on that list, I wasn't really familiar with them. There was a guy named Bill Verna that was Australian and also wrestled in Britain. That's number one on the list at either 96 or 97 years of age. Samson Burke, a Canadian wrestler. He's 95. Octavia Goana Jr., Mexican wrestler at 94. And then in fourth place, a guy named Hank Garrett, who's probably better known for being on the TV show Car 54, Where Are You, from what I'm reading about him. But he did wrestle for a while, but he was a little bit older than a Bald Eagle at 94 years. And now the current fifth place is somebody I'm familiar with, Nick Kozak, who wrestled all over the United States. He's just a little bit younger than Bob Boyer, but that's always an interesting list, especially when you know, we had Cowboy Bob Ellis near the top of that list for the last decade or so, and then we found out just a few months ago that he had actually died about 5 years ago, I guess it was, and you know, no one knew, so he wasn't quite as old as we had suspected, but. Bob Boyer, Chief Bald Eagle, had been living in Indianapolis pretty much, I think, since the mid to late 1960s. He made that his adopted home. He was born in Winnipeg, Canada, and wrestled there to begin with before expanding his career to the States. He started wrestling in 1957 and had his final match in 1987, so a 30-year career. That's pretty good, I'd say.
Yeah, and like a lot of guys from his era, he's very underappreciated.
I'd say so.
Yeah,
definitely. Well,
yeah, because a lot of his, quite a bit of his prime work is, you know, pre-video, the prominence
that's
of video.
That's so, right. So you really had to have been living in one of his territories that he worked in to know him. You know, he got a little bit of magazine coverage, of course.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, you either needed to live in a small territory like the WWA, you know, and we'll go through some of the other areas that he did wrestle in, but that's so many years ago, you've got to have fans that are probably going to have to be in at least their 50s, if not their 60s, 70s, or 80s to have remembered him quite well.
Yep, absolutely. But yeah, he did. He had a very prominent career, as you know, we're going to talk about a lot of things you're going to go over here. I think it will surprise a lot of people how much he accomplished in his career.
Probably so. And even myself, after I started doing more research, you know, I thought I knew him, knew all about him, and ended up finding out things that I did not know.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably that we also point out quickly that there has been some confusion, especially on internet reports and some of the bios that have been posted about him. There's confusion between this Bald Eagle and another wrestler that adopted that name around the same time that that Bob Boyer retired, that went by Bobby Bald Eagle, that would have to be, I'd say, at least 30 years younger than him.
Yeah.
And I believe this other Bobby Bald Eagle is still living, but he had wrestled. I remember seeing him on the AWA tapes that were mm-hmm. done in Las Vegas in some of the latter years of the AWA, and I thought that was kind of odd that this guy was not necessarily stealing his gimmick, but you know, adopting that same name. But that wrestler went by just Bobby Bald Eagle, whereas Bob Boyer, after he became an Indian, he was known as Chief Bobby Bald Eagle. Sometimes the first name Bobby was used, sometimes it was not. It was kind of interchangeable throughout his time using that name. But we do want to make sure, though, that people do understand that there's two wrestlers with that name, and you can't trust everything on the internet.
Right.
I know I looked at his Wikipedia page right after he had passed, and it had not been updated to indicate that he had died. But then a couple of days later, when it did, it starts listing all this other stuff about the other Bobby Bald Eagle wrestling in England, and then retiring in the 90s, and became a trainer in New York, where he continues to train today, as far as I know. But the last time I looked yesterday, it had all been changed, and now it is all information about Bob Boyer as Chief Bald Eagle.
Yeah, it was those Vegas AWA tapes. It was peculiar because I know, like, Wahoo McDaniel was around a lot,
yes,
and prominent, and they brought in some different partners, like with this, and then I believe they even used a Jay Strongbow Jr. at one point that was not the Jay Strongbow Jr. because it was an actual stranger. It was peculiar. I don't know what they were doing. I don't know if Vern was just having recall of some names he knew from the past, and
that could be. You know,
and I don't know. It was
same thing could be said about Dick the Bruiser and some of the things he came up.
True. Dick wasn't afraid to try to leech a little bit off the fame of some people, was he?
Right.
But definitely. So hopefully we can clear some of that up for anybody that, because obviously there'll probably be several people that'll go out and read the Wikipedia and things like that as this has come. So hopefully we can set
absolutely,
a few things.
Right. Absolutely. So the first match that I can find on record for Bob Boyer participating in would have been in June of 1957 in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, at the Auditorium. And in that match, he lost by disqualification against a wrestler that I'm not familiar with. It's either Gary or Jerry. It's spelled G-E-R-R-Y. So I guess it could be either one. And the last name, Dugas, D-U-G-A-S.
Yeah.
And, I've always thought of Bob Boyer / Chief Bold Eagle as being a career babyface. But for the very fact that he lost by disqualification in his very first match, that kind of indicates to me that he was probably the heel in the match. But, who knows? We'd have to probably do some research on Jerry Dugas to find out about that, and there's not a whole lot of information about him.
That spelling of Gary Jerry again, it reminds me of the copycat wrestlers with Jerry Lawler,
right? Which is kind of one of the things we're just talking about, Vern Gagne and Dick Blizzard.
That's what it always reminds me of when I see that. But
absolutely, but then by the first of 1958, Boyer was wrestling in Nashville. And I found there that there was a result where he participated in a whopping 7-man battle royal that was won by a future rival of his in Indianapolis, Don Fargo. But that match also had Jackie Fargo in it and Chief Kit Fox. So that might have been his introduction to just what an Indian wrestler might look like and might behave in a wrestling ring, that he when he adopted that persona 15 years later.
I was curious, and I don't know if maybe his kids know or what, but why he did adopt that gimmick later, and what caused that.
We'll get to that. I'm sure that's something though that came out of the WWA kind of move him up the card. He'd been a preliminary wrestler throughout the 60s when he would come into Indy, but by the early 70s we had Billy Red Cloud.
That's right. It does sound like a Bruiser repackage,
and that allowed them to be a tag team, which elevated Bob Boyer up to a higher spot on the card, and and it created a pretty popular tag team, and we'll be talking about them a little bit later too. But in the 50s, Boyer also wrestled, still as Bob Boyer, his real name, in Alabama, which was a territory he ventured into a number of times over the decades. The Carolinas, he was in and out of there, and also Virginia. But by 1960, believe it or not, he was working in the New York area. So that would have been for Vincent J. McMahon, and what would have been the precursor to what would be known as the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, and now known as WWE. And he appeared throughout the Northeast and faced big names at the time, Killer Kowalski, and not Big K, Stan Kowalski, that wrestled in Indianapolis, but the real Killer Kowalski, Arnold Skolin, the Fabulous Kangaroos, and the Tolos Brothers. A lot of those were TV tapings, but he also wrestled on the live cards in that territory. And he would appear in the Northeast and the New York territory throughout the 1960s. So I wasn't really aware that he had probably three or four different stints there until I started doing all this research about him.
Yeah. And again, that's a prominent position.
Absolutely.
So it's, again, very, pre-video, or at least, an abundance of video. So again, it's a lot of things he accomplished that are surprising, because we don't see video. We don't have video. There's not a lot out there. And it's it's pretty remarkable. That's a prominent thing to be wrestling, a position to be in.
Right. In the early 60s, in 1961, He was in St. Louis wrestling Buddy Rogers on TV that summer. And this would have been just weeks before Buddy Rogers became the NWA champion when he beat Pat O'Connor in Chicago in front of the big crowd at the baseball stadium. So incredible. That's another high profile match that, yeah. that he had. From there, I ended up finding that that he was working in Iowa, and I found a really, really what I felt was a strange result. He teamed with Harley Race in a handicap match. So they were the two-man team, which usually means that's the lesser team to put over the one guy. But it was up against a wrestler known as the Vulture, somebody I'm not familiar with at all. but that would have been fairly early in Harley Race's career as well. But I would have thought, though, at least by that point, he would have been on an upward swing in the area. But that would have been what would have had to have been considered part of the Central States where Harley, that was basically his home base.
Would love to know more about the Vulture. there has got to be a great story there.
There has to be, whether he was masked or not, or had wings that he wore to the ring. We do not know. That may be lost to history.
Maybe,
Boyer would go in and out of the Central States for a few years, and then he ended up in the Northwest and was wrestling in Portland. I wasn't familiar with him working there, but he did pretty well there. And another territory he worked in the 60s was Texas, all throughout the state. And I found that in 1966, he had a victory over Dory Funk Jr. And the city was Amarillo. So that would have been the Funk promotion, Dory Funk Sr.'s promotion. So,
yep. mm-hmm.
so they must have thought pretty highly of him to have him get a win over Dory. And also during that time, I found where he had tag team matches where Boyer was teamed with Terry Funk. So whether or not the match with Dory was face versus face or they were flipping Boyer back and forth. I don't think Terry was a heel during that time, but I don't know for sure about that. That would be a different story. But the earliest I could find Bob Boyer wrestling in Indiana would have been in the summer of 1967. Although I have a feeling that it might have been earlier than that, because in other conversations that we've had, you know that my father worked for the Indiana State Athletic Commission. Mm-hmm. And, from a very early age, I can remember my dad talking about him. And, he knew him quite well. And I'm just thinking that he had to have been around even earlier than that to have made an impression on him, because by the time he had switched to being Bobby Bold Eagle, he knew him quite well as Bob Boyer, and had pointed that out that he basically had changed his wrestling gimmick to become an Indian, but wasn't really an Indian.
I think it's probably a safe assumption. I would venture to guess he was probably in and out. Making appearances.
That's what I'm guessing. Yeah. That's what I would have to say had to have happened. It looks like he became a regular in the WWA around either 66 or 67, but he was always in the preliminary matches to no higher than the middle of the card. And he also was working in the Minneapolis territory and the AWA. And even there, before the AWA was officially named and formed as Vern Gagne's promotion, he was working that territory a lot.
Yeah.
Always as Bob Boyer, of course. It appears that he really didn't work for the AWA after becoming Chief Bold Eagle, if you're not counting Chicago, which, of course, was the split promotion between the AWA with Gagne and the WWA with Snyder and Bruiser. So that would make sense. He may have appeared as Bold Eagle in some of the other AWA towns that ran northern Illinois, but for the most part, he kind of dropped off from being an AWA wrestler once he became Chief Bold Eagle. He had another WWF stint around that time as well. Then in through the mid-70s, he was working in Georgia and Alabama. But also always coming back to Indianapolis. So then that's where he becomes an Indian wrestler. So, as I mentioned, Billy Red Cloud, who is actually Native American, or I should say was, as he's no longer with us. His real name is Bill Wright. He had wrestled under that name, but had early on in his career decided to use some of his Native American heritage and went by the name Billy Red Cloud. And he was a main event, semi-main event wrestler in the WWA, had even held the WWA title by winning it against Baron Von Raschke and later losing it right back to him. Mm-hmm. But those two being paired together instantly became a big fan favorite, especially with kids who, I think loved seeing the Indian gimmick. But what always stood out to me, whenever they were paired together, I believe I would have been around 8 years of age. And here you had Billy Red Cloud, who was obviously the leader of the tag team since he'd been the world champion and high up on the cards. He's teamed up with Chief Bold Eagle. Well, why is Bold Eagle a chief, but not the leader of the tag team? A chief, by definition, I think, is going to be over. Sure. Everybody else is not a chief, but right. That wasn't the way it was there. But they had a lot of great matches in the WWA. But also when he was working for Bruiser in the WWA at that time, he went on two tours of New Japan Pro Wrestling in 1972 and 1973. And from looking at the other names that were on the card, I'd say he was probably considered to be either the top or the second biggest name of the Americans that they had on that tour. He even had matches against Antonio Inoki, although I know a lot of times whenever they would bring in talent for those 6 or 8 week tours, you would see them wrestle almost everybody that they would bring in whenever they would bring in 6 or 8 wrestlers from the United States, Canada, and sometimes Europe for that. But he was going by Bob Boyer on those tours. So those probably would have been some of his final matches before he was in his final years of his career as working as Bob Boyer.
Yeah. And no idea that he had done some tours with New Japan.
Right. Whenever with Billy Red Cloud in the WWA, some of the opponents that I remember seeing them, wrestle would have been the Blackjacks, Blackjack Lanza, Blackjack Mulligan, managed by Bobby Heenan. We had the Graduates, which were Angelo Poffo and Ken Dillinger, managed by Mark Manson. Sometimes Manson would team with one or both of them in six-man tag team matches and be opponents of the Indians, who would be teamed often with Cowboy Bob Ellis. We had a Japanese tag team, Mitsu Arakawa, Igo Hamaguchi, that they went against. And also the Beast and the Wolf Man, who were well known in Canada. Mm-hmm. The Beast, that was his name here, but I think in Canada and most other territories, he was probably better known as the Bear Man, Dave McKigney. He's the one that, of course, had the wrestling bears.
Yep.
And he also promoted his own shows in Canada that used a lot of the WWA talent that included Red Cloud, Bold Eagle, and I think they were using them at the top of their cards. But we had a lot of our other guys that went there too. I remember Bobby Heenan and Jimmy Valiant worked for him as well.
Yeah.
But and then at this time period, it reminds me of something that happened in 1972 when I got to see Boyer perform as both Chief Bold Eagle and Bob Boyer in the same night. And it was all because the assigned referee did not show up for the card. So this would have been the fall of 1972 in my hometown of Terre Haute. We had not had wrestling in over 4 years here. In the kind of mid to late 60s, they were having trouble drawing crowds. We didn't have local TV. The TV had to be picked up out of Indianapolis off of an antenna. His cable hadn't come yet by that point, but by the fall, our local promoter Ralph Hamilton, who was also a referee in Indiana for Bruiser, and had also been a professional boxer earlier on in his career. He was the local promoter. I remember that all the shows during that time started at 8:30 p.m. And I'm there with my dad. I'm just a youngster, but he's working there as for the athletic commission. And he'd let me know that the referee wasn't there yet, and they weren't really sure what they were going to do. And it's getting closer and closer to bell time, but also I guess because we hadn't had wrestling in Terre Haute for so many years, there were fans that just kept pouring in to the National Guard Armory downtown, and they were still coming in at 8:30, and they were adding chairs to ringside to accommodate them, since it was a bigger crowd than expected. One of the few things that, rare things that happens in pro wrestling.
Yeah.
But they were also stalling, thinking that the referee's going to show up because, no cell phones during that time.
Yeah.
Nobody had heard from whomever it was. I'm not sure who it was that was supposed to be there, but, ended up, they finally realized it's probably about 8:45, getting close to 9 o'clock, that, the referee wasn't going to be there. So they basically drafted Chief Bold Eagle to become the referee. Now, before the matches had started, Bold Eagle was already in his gear. He was going to be in the semi-main event in a tag team match. But he'd already had his face paint on that he would wear. He used to wear these leather strap things on his wrists and his legs that had the, for lack of a better term, jingle bells on them. So every step he would make, you would hear that. And I think he knew that would attract fans. But he always liked to come out and be amongst the crowd before matches would start, or even while other matches are taking place. He would stand in the back and watch them. And if fans wanted to come up and talk to him and get an autograph, he was very accommodating to that. So, he's there. I'd already seen him for at least a half an hour or more, dressed up as Chief Bold Eagle. And they decided that he would be the referee for the opening matches, because Ralph Hamilton, although he is a referee, he wanted to have his actual gear before he went into the ring to referee. So, you're a former wrestler. Isn't there a rule that if you're a wrestler and you're going to a card, whether you're booked or not, what is that rule?
Oh, you always have your bag. Always have your gear.
Yeah, you always have your gear. Now, maybe that doesn't apply to referees. I don't know.
Yeah.
You'd think it would. But Ralph didn't want to apparently go into the ring without having his gear. So he sent his wife to get that while he's working there. Because he says not only being the promoter, he's also running the concession stand, because that's where you can make your real money at a lot of these cards. So it was a four-match card. Bob Boyer refereed the first two matches. Ralph Hamilton refereed the final two. So the opening match that card was Bobby Heenan against Gilbert Guerrero, another longtime wrestler in the Indianapolis territory. So Bold Eagle goes back to the locker room, washes off all of his face paint, changes out of his wrestling gear, and puts on his probably the street clothes that he wore to the arena, which I don't think they were blue jeans. I think they were probably just just everyday black casual, or what we would call casual dress pants today, and a polo shirt. And so he's introduced now as your referee, Bob Boyer. And again, I'm only eight, so I don't really probably know the difference between a great referee and a poor one, but I think he did a fine job. I don't remember seeing anything being out of whack there. He didn't get knocked down. He didn't trip any wrestlers, didn't miss anything. But he refereed that match, as well as the second match that had Higo Hamaguchi against Cowboy Bob Ellis. And then after two matches, we would always have an intermission. So that gave him time to go back to the locker room, get changed. By this point, Ralph Hamilton's wife had reappeared from his house with the with his striped referee shirt and white pants and his black wrestling boots.
Oh, man.
So he refereed the semi-main event that did involve Chief Bobby Bold Eagle and Billy Red Cloud against the Blackjacks.
Yeah.
So, of course, that meant Bobby Heenan was working a second time now as a manager. Yeah. And then the main event was Baron Von Raschke, managed by Bobby Heenan, against Wilbur Snyder. So he worked two matches as a referee and then wrestled the semi-main event all on the same night. You know, whether or not he'd ever did any other refereeing before or after that, I'm not aware of it.
Yeah.
But that even though I was just a little kid, that always stood out to me as being funny. That here he was already dressed up in his wrestling gimmick and had to change out of it and become a civilian, not a warrior. But and I'm sure that the older wrestling fans that were there that would be much older than me, they probably remembered him as Bob Warrior, but that kind of exposed to them, I would have to think, and that's having that those two stripes on each cheek with the face paint made him as being indistinguished from being the same man, kind of like when Clark Kent would take
that's
off
right
and become Superman.
Yeah, oh, that's funny.
throughout Indianapolis being his home, he would go in and out of the territory. Part of that was his own choice. Sometimes the promotion would stop booking him. I kind of think that Bruiser kind of may have mistreated him some, you know, whether or not that was justified or not. I don't really think you can say that it probably is justified, but Bald Eagle, I think, would sometimes complain about his payoffs, which he wouldn't have been the only one probably in the WWA. Mm,
yeah.
The guys on top usually, I don't think, had any problems, but preliminary wrestlers, I think that they felt that they would be shortchanged, especially if there was a big house and they're expecting to profit from that as well by earning a percentage. But I'm not sure that Bruiser always paid his wrestlers a percentage based on the house. And so sometimes that worked out in the favor of the wrestler. So, you know, if you had a really poor crowd and only had 250 fans and with an average ticket price of probably would have been around maybe $3, $3.50 at that time. As tickets at top price around that time were either $4 or $5 for ringside and probably down to $2 for general admission and bleachers. I think that some of those times when they were getting a $40, $50, or $75 payoff, that probably would have been higher percentage than what they would have actually earned if they were being paid for that. So maybe with Bruiser math, maybe that's how you can justify if I take care of you on the bad days, you can take care of me on the good days and settle for less.
Yeah.
But throughout that time, I would see Bald Eagle on the mid cards, no higher than the mid card in Indianapolis when he was teamed with Billy Red Cloud. But as a solo, he was always near the bottom of the card. But that wasn't the case throughout the rest of the territory. He could be positioned anywhere on those cards. He could be in the opening match. Quite often he'd be in the middle of the card, either in the second or match or the semi-main event, but occasionally would even be in main events, either in tag team matches or a few singles. But most of the time, if he was getting a main event spot, it was either in a regular four-man tag team or a six-man tag team match.
Yeah.
He would also quite often be in babyface matches where he would wrestle other WWA good guys. I can remember seeing him against wrestlers and mainstays from our area, such as Prince Pullins, Steve Regal, who we lost about 6 months ago, Golden Boy Paul Christie, whenever he was still a babyface, and Johnny Starr, who was a wrestler / manager in the territory, but had stopped managing for a point and had his babyface turn. He had wrestled Bald Eagle, and I can remember one particular match that had Bald Eagle against Starr, and this was where Starr had just turned babyface, and the fans weren't really trusting him, but he wrestled the whole match as a babyface, and it was a 15-minute time limit match, and the way it would go back during that time, you know, we would always have the times announced after 5 minutes, after 10 minutes, and then it would usually be every minute thereafter until you got down to that final minute, and you'd have the had the 45-second announcement, then the 30-second announcement, and then 15, then at 10, you would really expect this match to be a Broadway, but instead, Bold Eagle snatched Johnny Starr in a backslide and got the three count right before the time limit expired, and that one caught me by surprise, too, because here I thought Johnny Starr was starting to get a babyface push, and he was starting to win over the crowd during that match, but instead the Bold Eagle went over. Maybe it was by accident, but I doubt that. I think that was probably the finish that was called for.
Yeah.
By the dying days of the WWA, so we're talking about the 1982, 83, 84, that's whenever Bobby Bold Eagle, or Chief Bobby Bold Eagle, to make sure we don't confuse him with that other guy, he transitioned back to using his given name of Bob Boyer, and he started working for the WWF again. And maybe not everybody realizes this, but during those early expansion years of the WWF, they would sometimes book local territory wrestlers on cards to put over some of their talent in some of the opening matches. And Bold Eagle, as Bob Boyer, had done that in Indianapolis. Jerry Valiant has gotten back to being Guy Mitchell. He did that. He even did some refereeing for the WWF during that time. But Bold Eagle did that and also appeared on WWF tapings in both St. Louis and the traditional Northeast, wrestling as Bob Boyer. Because at this time, St. Louis was kind of like it is the gateway to the West. It was almost like a Western division of the WWF, where they were doing TV tapings there, I think, like every month.
Yeah.
And so a lot of our talent worked, referring to our talents being the WWA talent, would go there to get some extra work. But by that point, Bold Eagle had stopped working for Bruiser, and was doing that. And of course, you know, he was always enhancement talent on all those shows, and he was starting to show his age a bit too in the ring there. But whether or not he was Bob Boyer or Chief Bold Eagle, he was a good wrestler for the WWA to have for all those years, because he always did what was expected of him. I don't think I can ever recall any time he no-showed a card or anything like that. But if they needed him to put over the new heel coming into the territory, he was a guy that could do that and, of course, make them look good in doing so. If it was somebody on their way out, like I can remember whenever Kim Duck was leaving the territory, Bold Eagle, who probably would not have beaten him when Duck was being pushed, but on his final appearance in Indianapolis, Bold Eagle got a pin on him. But he wrestled just about everybody that would come through the territory. He never won any championships here. He did win some singles and tag team titles throughout the NWA territories in the South and even in Texas. He had been, I think, a junior heavyweight champion there.
It is a little peculiar to me that him and Red Cloud never got any kind of run with the tag titles.
No, but you got to look at that. Whenever they were doing that, they were up against the Blackjacks.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
They were the most dominant tag team I think we ever had. I think they held the straps for over a year. I think they're the longest reigning tag team champs we had. And they beat everybody, and it took the ultimate tag team to take the belts off of them, and by that I mean Dick the Bruiser and Bruiser, Crusher.
Yeah. So that's true.
That's what Bruiser was building up to. So a couple of guys like Red Cloud and Bold Eagle, they're not gonna steal their thunder.
That's right. There you go.
And I don't think they got a title match in Indianapolis. They did in Terre Haute and some of the other cities. I can remember there was an Indianapolis card where they did get a win over kind of an unusual pairing. It was Blackjack Mulligan teamed with Baron Von Raschke. Mm-hmm. And Blackjack Lanza, I think, had a singles match on the card that night. But they would do that sometimes, where they would kind of mix things up in the WWA, where the traditional tag team would be split up. But even though both guys would be on the card, that happened with Jimmy and Johnny Valiant a number of times as well throughout the 70s.
Yeah.
With the passing of Bald Eagle the other day, as we're speaking today, it's the day after his funeral. I spoke to a friend of the show, Scott Romer, the renowned wrestling photographer, and also the guy that went on to be Saul Creechman as a wrestler slash manager for Bruiser. He told me that he used to travel with Bald Eagle in the 70s and 80s. He would be his driver to take him to some of the shows, so that way Bald Eagle could sleep while he did the driving. But Scott also told me a few things about him that I wasn't aware of, that he'd been involved in two auto accidents that had resulted in the deaths of the people that were in the accident with him. One involved a bicycle that apparently had no reflectors or lights on it, and the bicyclist had rode their bike into his path and was struck and unfortunately passed away. And then after that, a few years after that, there was a motorcycle that had crashed into a car driven by Boyer, and unfortunately resulted in their death as well. So, that would have to be tough to weigh on your mind. Even if you're if you're at fault or not at fault, it's going to be something that's going to stick with you.
Yep.
But Scott was able to attend his memorial, and on Facebook he's posted pictures that he took of some of the memorabilia that was on display, and I found that very interesting. There was a framed ring jacket with his name, Bob Boyer, embroidered on it. So that would have been, from the looks of it, I'd say probably something that he probably was using either in the early 50s or the early 60s, but would have been an expensive jacket, I'm sure, at that time.
Yeah.
And he also had a lot of his Indian memorabilia that he would use either coming to the ring or doing the TV tapings of interviews. He would have tomahawks and some of that. But missing from that, though, was the drum that he used to occasionally bring to the ring in the early 70s. But I have a feeling that probably either got worn out or maybe lost in the shuffle at some point, because by the mid 70s, he wasn't using that anymore. But he would sometimes beat a drum before he would come to the ring. Yeah. But what I found is the most interesting piece of memorabilia there was, there was on display one of the Gulf Coast tag team title belts. So that would have been from the Alabama territory, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And I cannot find any record of him being that champion. So how he ended up with that belt, I don't know. Did he perhaps win it and maybe he left the territory on his own accord or was let go and he happened to have it in his possession, that he took it with him. Maybe somebody gave it to him. I know in the 90s and in the 2000s, Bald Eagle would go to some of the wrestling reunions, like Cauliflower Alley and the Gulf Coast reunion. He liked to attend those. So, maybe somebody gave it to him then. But there was also a plaque there that was apparently on display with it that listed the Southern Tag Team Champions belt, 1961, 1966, and then the Gulf Coast years of being 1967 to 1972. So I don't know if that means that was a championship that transitioned from 66 from Southern to 67 to being the Gulf Coast belts, or if maybe there were two belts with it at one point and the other one's not there now. But that was a bit unusual that was on display there during that time.
Yep.
Yeah. But as his career was kind of winding down in the 70s and 80s, he had taken on a shoot job. He worked for Amtrak, which is the railroad company, and it appears from his obituary that he worked there for 30 years. So I'm thinking that probably had to, I don't know what position he had, but I had some in-laws and known other people that had relatives that worked for railroad companies during that time, and they were always well taken care of, you know, with good salaries, and then especially with great retirements and insurance. So, so I was glad to see that he, you know, that he had had that career post wrestling, and also you know, during the latter years of his career. At 93, you know, he was, of course, not in the best of health. Scott said that he was confined to a wheelchair. And, of course, with, you know, with that age comes the typical issues with memory that would go along with it. And he was suffering from that as well. But to live to be 93 years of age, you know, especially in wrestler years, that is quite a while, quite a long career. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I've spoke with his children many times over the past many years, and I always wanted to interview Bob, right? Tried to, you know, see if I could get something, and then, but his kids always told me this with some of his health issues that it probably wouldn't be able to, you know, it wasn't gonna work,
right?
So unfortunately, you know, that, you know, I tried, but unfortunately it was, you know, a little late to it with, you know, Bob is already having some health issues. And
the last time I spoke to him, and it was in person, would have been, I'm thinking probably around 1996 or so. So we're talking 30 years ago, believe it or not. It would have been one of the Circle City wrestling shows run by Mike Samples in Indianapolis. They had a big, I think they were considering to be their anniversary show, and they had it at a bigger arena than what they would normally run, but they also decided to honor a couple of WWA legends. One was Johnny Starr, and the other was Bob Boyer, Chief Bold Eagle, and they both appeared there and got plaques. And you know, I talked to both of them at pretty great length that night, and I could tell though that Bob really didn't like what he was seeing in wrestling at that time. The matches were taking place during that point, and I think I might have asked him, you know, what he thought about the state of wrestling, and then he just kind of went off on it. You know, they're killing the business. This is ridiculous. You know, why would you do this? Why would you want to crash through this? I mean, why would you? How can you hit somebody with that and they continue on? It makes no sense. You know, it irritated him, and that was pretty typical, I think, of most of probably the wrestlers from his days, not liking it, and probably whenever he broke in the 50s and into the 60s. He was probably dealing with the same thing with guys that had been around since the 30s and 40s, not liking what they were doing.
So I think that's the perpetual problem with wrestling, right?
It is. And I go way back. I've been watching wrestling consistently for 60 years myself now. Mm. And there's a lot of things that I see that I wish were more like the old days, that in some aspects, the old days were better as far as how you could, I think, work the crowd and get them more emotionally involved. But, you know, I'm not going to say that today's wrestlers aren't better, because they are. I mean, and that's mainly because the evolution of training and staying in shape that the wrestlers from yesteryear didn't necessarily, you know, have to do. Yep. But, you know, there's some remarkable things that today's wrestlers are doing. But I fear, though, that it's going to be at the expense of their health, you know, in their retirement years. They may regret some of that stuff, too.
That's right.
But, you know, if you're working for a big company now, you know, you might only have to wrestle you know, no more than, maybe 8 or 9 times a month. And a lot of them, it's even half or less than that, and that looks to be the new norm. So, you know, they're giving you a little bit more time to recover from going through a table or what have you. But all in all, I'd say that Bob Boyer had a great career. He needs to be remembered. I can't say that he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, like, I think we've all debated whether or not Wilbur Snyder should be in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame or the WWE's Hall of Fame. You know, he's somebody I think definitely should be, based on what he accomplished Bob Boyer, Chief Bald Eagle, he probably, didn't, draw the crowds or wasn't positioned on the cards to be able to be considered a Hall of Famer, but to have such a long career and to work with so many big names throughout his career, whether he was in a tag team match with Dick the Bruiser, or if he's facing the original Sheik or Rogers or, any of those guys, he really knew, everybody from that time period, from the 50s through the mid 80s. So he's somebody that needs to be remembered. Yep. And hopefully, by recording this show and people that come across that name and look him up, they'll learn a little bit more about him in the years to come. So,
yep.
So that I'm glad that we get to have this conversation about him, because otherwise he might have been a forgotten name, except for those of us that were lucky enough to have grown up and seen him perform in the WWA in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely someone who should be remembered. Definitely someone who people need to dig a little deeper on.
One thing we didn't talk about was his finishing maneuver. Do you remember what that was?
I don't. What was it?
Oh, well, it's the bow and arrow hold.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And to me, that's so fitting, that the name of that that move and for that wrestler, today's wrestling, when you watch that, almost every move they make, they're renaming everything to be something that's that either rhymes with or they can work their name into it. But he would do that move, and to me, what was interesting about that, you probably couldn't put a he wouldn't have, if he would have wrestled Moose Cholak was never going to take that move.
Sure.
Bruiser never would have taken that move. Snyder probably not either. But other wrestlers, especially the heels that he would work with, like Mark Manson, Johnny Starr, they could take this move. Where, you've been in the ring. I've never a wrestler. I was almost a referee one night, but never had to get in the ring to take the move. But the way he would do that, he would work over his opponent's back, usually by giving them knee after knee kick to the back to wear them down, and then whenever he had them basically at his will, he would grab a hold of either one of their feet or have their feet crossed, so that he's in control of both legs, and roll back with his knee in the center of their back by holding on to the feet with his left hand, and then with his right hand around their chin, and then would roll back. So that's putting the pressure on their back.
Yep.
And usually within a few seconds, the wrestler's waving off and submitting to him. I'm sure there probably were times that wrestlers were able to break the hold, but I really don't remember anybody ever doing that. But, that was something that Bruiser usually did, was protect wrestlers with their finishing moves. If the hold would have been broken, I'm sure it would have been either by a manager's interference or in a tag team match, it would have been the tag team partner rushing in and breaking that up. But did you ever have to take the bow and arrow hold from somebody?
Nah, not that I remember, but it is a possibility.
And it's a hold, though, that I think is kind of forgotten in the business.
Yeah.
I don't really think anybody uses it. I've seen it every once in a while, and maybe in some women's matches. In AEW, but it seems like to me that would be a hold that could get over even today.
Yeah,
if it was presented correctly.
Probably it would probably be used more of a rest spot now than it would be a finish.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not going to gain a submission.
No. Yeah, but there is some footage of Bob out there.
There is.
The 70s. So you want to look that up on YouTube. There's
you've put a lot of it up yourself, I believe. And
I've got some episodes that he's on. Episodes of WWE TV, so people can give it a look and see Bob. Obviously want to send the condolences out to his family, his kids, and everybody that knew him. And we wanted to come on here and honor him a little bit, talk about his career, and shine a light. That's the purpose, right? To help help remember, and as we can do. And John, I thank you for helping with this and doing these notes and coming on and talking about him. Because you saw, a big chunk of his career in Indiana firsthand. So
absolutely.
It's always good to talk to you. It's always good to do these things and remember. And and talk the history of the WWA. So, and like we said today, to remember Bob Boyer. So, thank you, John. You know you'll be back on in the future. We always always tap into you for things like this. So we'll have you back on, of course, many times, I'm sure, in the future.
All right, look forward to it.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle, all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
All right, and thank you to John for coming on and talking with me about Bob Boyer's career. Go look him up, guys. Go learn a little bit, dig a little deeper. That's what your mission is now. Make sure you follow me on social media. I'm pretty much on all the platforms. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty, and you can find me. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all of my various podcasts. So be sure to go check out the WrestleCopia Network of Podcasts. You can find the individual podcasts on your favorite podcast platforms, or you can visit WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit ClassicWrestling.net to sign up for your account now, and then download the app on all of your smart devices. So next episode, my guest will be fellow podcaster Mayor John McCall. We are going to chat wrestling, podcasting, and so much more. It is going to be a fun discussion, a fun chat. So make sure you join us for that. Guys, thank you again for tuning back in to Wrestling Nostalgia and being on board. And hopefully you learned a little bit today. Hopefully we did Bob proud in remembering him. So guys, just remember, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.